Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is, folks. You've been waiting for it, and now you got it. Our bird experts are back. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart are here to answer your bird questions. If you have one, call 800-348-2551 is the number for your bird questions. 800-348-2551. Email, if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address. And the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. It's Rich Guthrie. It's Julie Hart. It's you. And the birds will be back right after the news. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are discussing birds today on the program, and we welcome back our avian experts, Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He's the regional reviewer for the premier birding site eBird and a budding metal detectorist. Julie Hart is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She has a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. You got a question about the birds? Call 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Exciting times in birdland. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, as some people have already done, but the number is 800-348-2551. Julie Hart, how you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back. You told me before the show that it's exciting duck time.
It is.
What's going on with the ducks?
Are coming. They're coming from the north. They're done breeding, and now they're coming down here. And so all of the larger water bodies around this area are starting to have a lot of lots of nice ducks around. So
how many varieties will we see if we go out and look?
Oh, gosh. I don't know, 15, 20?
I'd say 15 thereabouts.
That's a lot of ducks.
It's a lot of different kinds of ducks.
Yeah.
And they're heading our way.
Everything from little teal all the way up to geese and
swans.
So geese and swans are technically ducks?
Well, they're waterfowl.
Well, I got you.
They got web feet.
Broader term, yeah.
They swim.
Well, it's exciting. Rich Guthrie, what's happening with you, man?
Hey, autumn's in the air. In fact, we got that winter wind coming down, and that's what happens. Right now is a good time if you want to see golden eagles. We're right in the peak of their migration period. Places to go would be over in Franklin Mountain by in New York, or Mount Tom in Massachusetts, or perhaps down at Chestnut Ridge, down in the lower Hudson, Connecticut River, Connecticut Bay area.
Okay.
And
how can you tell? Do they look literally golden?
Actually, they do. They have a beautiful golden mane. Color to them that shines from a distance. It looks like it's glowing, even at a great distance. With binoculars, you can pick them out.
You know, Julie Hart, you live in my neck of the woods, so I'm going to run this one by you. We were out a couple of weekends ago in the afternoon and looking out toward the west, and maybe two streets over, there was a huge group of big black birds riding thermals.
Yeah.
And they weren't quite close enough for us to identify. My original guess was these are black vultures, but could they have been some bird of prey?
They could have also been turkey vultures. They have just recently kind of departed the area because now we're finally getting the cold air through. So you may have seen a mixture of black
and turkey
vultures.
But they would be vultures, you think?
Most likely vultures.
I mean, it was amazing. We've never seen anything like that. And they were just lazily riding the thermals, and there were probably 15 or 20 of them.
Nice.
It was so cool.
That's a good description, too, the lazy flight of the vulture. They just have such ease in the air.
And then once they start to actually migrate, so first thing when they wake up in the morning, they're riding those thermals, they're going up, 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 up. And then once they start to actually move, they'll be at the top of that cyclone, basically, and then they just start darting direct flight in one direction, heading south usually.
So they're not very good flappers, right? Is that the problem here?
Oh, they're actually not bad flappers. I mean, they get that when they need to get airborne, they can put that wings to work. But better than that, they know how to work the air. so that they don't have to work.
All right. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org if you have a birding question. Jamie in Holyoke wrote in a couple of hours ago. Says, I have had a sunflower seed feeder for a couple of years, but have just begun seeing blue jays eat there, while the other birds seem to pick a single seed at a time and crack the hull open to eat the kernel. The blue jays are gulping them down one after another, hull and all. My question, and I'll throw this to you, Julie, do they then fly off and regurgitate them to get rid of the hull elsewhere, or are they able to digest them as is?
It's a kind of a combination. They might be regurgitating them, or they may actually not be fully swallowed. They might just be in like a little patch in their mouth.
They have little pouches.
And they might spit it out and then hide it, like cache it for the winter.
Yeah.
Or they will eat it or, sometimes swallow things whole too.
Fairly disgusting.
Yeah.
What do all birds, Rich, eat stones like dinosaurs used to digest?
Many birds do.
Yeah.
Not all birds do. Many birds don't need to. But the seed-eating birds, like the sparrows and the finches, will have to get some grit. Just like a caged canary, you need to give it some grit to help digest its food.
Yeah, I didn't know that about caged canaries. By the way, how do you feel about caged canaries?
I think they're wonderful. I mean, I don't have any, but they make wonderful companions. They seem to thrive well.
Wait, what do you mean wonderful companions? They're in a cage.
Yeah, but you know what? They bring joy to people, and that's always important.
Well, I never understood fish tanks either, for that matter.
As long as they're not caught in the wild. That's the only thing
I'll
say.
Well, absolutely.
They cannot be caught in the wild. And
these birds have been bred in captivity for generations, just like domestic dogs and cats.
So that's against the law?
Yep.
Really?
But it happens all the time.
So people grab them and slap them in cages?
Not necessarily canaries. But some of us
parrots and
colorful songbirds, especially down south in Florida and the like. There seems to be an illegal trade and a black market trade and songbirds.
I feel bad about that.
Okay? I do, too.
I always feel bad for the fish in fish tanks, even if it's a goldfish. This is your entire world?
Yep.
And then I think, well, this world might seem big to me, but it's my entire world, and maybe something bigger out there says, "Well, look at that pathetic race sitting there in their tiny
philosophical
little
here."
Yes, I know, right? All right, let's move on. Thank you for talking me off the ledge. It's birds today, and not philosophy. Nick writes in, "I haven't put nuts and seeds out on the windowsill since last year. Lo and behold, they're starting to swing by. What? Oh, it's in the subject heading: owls and habits. They can be brats, however. What's a habit?
I don't know. They're behaviors, maybe.
Oh, I see. So it's owls.
Behaviors, maybe.
You know, Nick, you got to help me out here. I can barely read as it is. Also, Nick writes, have not heard barred owls in the last couple months near Ashokan Reservoir. Where are they?
Well, they're still there. They're just don't want to talk to you, Nick. Sorry.
The great horns in my yard have been calling pretty regularly for the last 3 weeks or so,
okay.
I'd say.
So
they are starting to get more vocal again.
You're on the edge of the woods, but I have plenty of woods near me, too. What do they sound like?
The great horns, it's just a very simple, ooh, ooh.
Low pitch?
Ooh, yeah.
I got to listen for that. We've heard a lot of screech owls over the summer.
That's wonderful. Now, these owls are right now carving out their winter territories. They're kicking the kids out, telling them, find your own turf.
Yeah.
And so this is how they'll do that. They'll call back and forth. And,
is that how you do it?
I've got to
take some advice here. Find your own turf. Let me write that down. This is from Jane. I've had success the last three seasons with one or two broods of bluebirds. Every year, this time of year, I see them returning to the tree the box is on, like they're showing their young, where they were born. Just now, there were at least a half a dozen bluebirds flitting around the tree. What a great gift. What are they actually doing? Julie Hart.
I suspect that it's a place they know where there is shelter for them. So at night they can roost in there. And they already know the area in terms of where they can forage, like where it's good to find food as well. So
yeah.
Multiple bluebirds will group up for overnight shelter. You can find 6, 8, 10 bluebirds in one nest box. There's a wonderful photograph that I saw from Ontario Birds of somebody opened the top of a bluebird nest box. It must have been on a chilly morning or something. They spent where the bluebird spent the night. And there was like 8 or 9 bluebirds in there looking up. They looked so innocent in there and said, please don't disturb us.
You know? Yeah.
Trying to stay warm.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Too early.
What do we know about, and we'll take a break here in a minute. What do we know about the, sort of a Jungian collective unconscious of birds here? In other words, is there memory that goes over generations?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so Jane surmised that the oldsters were telling the youngsters, this is where we grew up. Obviously, that may be projecting a little bit, but what are they doing? What are the old birds doing?
If it works, keep it working. It's a simple rule. I mean, if they it's sort of like they've been testing the water all these generations, and they keep coming back to where it has been working. And
okay.
If it's been disturbed or destroyed, they're going to have to forage for themselves and find a new suitable spot. But that's not already occupied. Tough life out there.
What's forage? Is that a
forage?
Oh, forage.
Forage.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got a little accent there. Got to go foraging. Hey, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We're going to be foraging for your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551. Put on your high-heeled sneakers. That's Grant Green on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's birds today. And I was listening to the music and nodding my head, and I heard the two bird people, Julie and Rich, talk about feeder watch. What is that?
Yeah. So it's a really fun project to do for families, people that have backyard feeders. School classes can do it as well. So it's called Project Feeder Watch. It's run out of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And it starts November 1st. It's not too late to start. And then goes through end of March?
Sometime next year.
So it's just trail cams that are set up?
No, once a week, like 2 mornings a week, you just watch what comes to your backyard or to your feeders. And then you report that in eBird.
So it's kind of a more casual breeding bird atlas sort of thing where we're checking
wintering.
Them out.
Yeah, interesting. So it's what they're doing when they're not breeding.
So cool. All right, Rich, you have a list of things, but why don't we take some calls?
Sure.
And then we'll do them at the 40 break.
It's a short list, fun things.
Well, how Let's short?
Is Very
it,
short.
Is it 4 seconds?
Yes.
All right, well then go.
Okay. Golden Eagles, do it.
All right, let's go to the phones. No, go ahead. Keep
no,
going.
No. So the other things is, speaking of bird feeders, keep an eye out for the unusual birds. The usual ones will be there, but watch for the ones that look a little different.
All right.
The oddball bird. Pictures, report it, eBird it, let us know. Share the information.
That's because Rich is a total skeptic. You could say, I saw a blue-footed booby up on my driveway. And I say, take a picture of it?
And we've had that happen with pictures. Proof is in the picture.
Okay.
Dutchess Rail Trail, tomorrow at 9 a.m. The Ralph Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County.
Yeah.
Join them for a hike. Go to RTWBC, Ralph T. Waterman Bird Club. .org. Get the details there.
10-4.
And then the John Bowes Natural History Society, speaking of waterfowl, will be going to the Ashokan Reservoir on Saturday, the 16th. Meet at 8 a.m. for that morning trip. Dress warm. It's chilly out there. Check with jbnhs.org. Good to go.
That's all you got?
That's all I got, right? Everybody else is hunkered down.
It wasn't 4 seconds, but it was all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones now. 800-348-2551. Birding with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. We'll start in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're up.
Anyway.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Julie and Rich.
Hello.
Hey. Yes, I just recently read, I thought it was in the Berkshire Eagle. I couldn't find it in my editions I have here. University of Rhode Island, they've been studying the eastern woodcock, and they've been tracking them down through on their migration north, and they've discovered that they are nesting on their way up northwards.
Mm-hmm.
They'll stop for a time in a location, I guess, have a clutch of eggs, raise them, and then continue on their migration north again, and possibly getting up here, hopefully early enough to the season to have another clutch up here, I guess.
That's very interesting, because woodcock do arrive rather early up here. In fact, they've been nesting with snow on the ground in the past, and so that's very, they got to be hurry-up birds.
Are those the ones that do those fancy dances you always talk about?
Yes, indeed, the woodcock, the timberdoodle.
Timberdoodle.
Yep. See, you did learn something, Ray.
Ah, thanks, Jim. I've only been doing the show 12 years, so yeah, thank
you. You retained it, too, though. That's the good thing.
There you go, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Julie, you want to comment on what Jim was talking about?
I do. I had heard a similar but slightly different story, which was that so because the males are doing these fancy flights that you were just mentioning, they're doing these courtship flights as they move north. So at all of these different places where they stop, and then at each place, the females will mate with them, and the females stay, but the male keeps going north. And so it's so it's and the females are raising the young by themselves. So that that's how the males can come up sooner. That's how they get here. You know, they're here in the mid to late March.
Yeah.
When there's still snow. And so they're breeding, they're mating with lots of females on the way up. And
what a life.
Yeah.
All right. That's just easy there. All right. Let's go back to the phones now. Just stop. I know where you're going with this. Rick in Glenville. Rick, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call, Ray. Hi, Julie. Hi, Rich. I'm calling to see if there's a way to keep woodpeckers away from the decorative cedar I have on my patio.
That's a tough call.
Yeah.
That's a tough call, Rick.
Cedar.
Depends on why they're there. If they're doing it for food, you got to, which is usually the case, then you got to source out what that is and work on that issue. If they're doing it for courtship, which ought to be during the nesting season where they use that wood as a resonant drum, to announce their territory and to attract a mate. Well, that's going to happen during the mating season as spring and during the early summer. But what you might want to do there is somehow muffle the sound by putting a cover over it temporarily so that it doesn't have the drum sound, and then wait for them to find another place where they can sing their woodpecker song.
It's unusual, Rich, right, that it's on cedar, though, right? Because there shouldn't be that many insects
the
cedar.
Right.
So I'm a bit curious. I mean,
did they just like the sound? It's not really mating season, though, right?
Yeah, but I don't think of cedar as being that resonant either. But
no.
So I'm a little puzzled.
So I think it probably has to do with the courtship thing. It doesn't mention when this was
occurring. Well, Rick is still here. So, Rick, when was it?
Oh, it's recent, so but that's nice, though. I mean, there's love in the air, so I guess maybe I'll let him stay.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie are here to answer your birding questions. We'll get back to the email bag in a bit, but let's keep on the phones here, and we'll go to Vermont. It's Bo. Bo, where are you in Vermont?
I'm in Montpelier.
Beautiful. Wow. Well, thanks for being on the show. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, I'm working and delivering. If you lose me, it's not because you hurt my feelings. It's just because of cell coverage.
10-4.
Hey, so I walk my dogs and I deer hunt around a stump dump in Montpelier, Vermont. It's an area where people dump their old, garden rubbish and yard rubbish.
Yeah.
And a lot of bulldozers, a lot of gravel, a lot of, dumping of sand and mulch and gravel, various things. Well, every year, right about this time, I see a very interesting flock of kind of parakeet-sized, white-ish or cream-ish colored birds with these little blunt heads and these little blunt beaks and a really high-pitched call that I can't get my Merlin app to pick up. And so I wonder, could I hang up and hear on the radio what your insight might be as to this flock? Or
you
do you
got
have
it.
Some
wow.
questions for
well,
me?
I don't know, Bo. If you can hang
they
in there, we'll,
questions,
go ahead,
yeah.
Julie, you first.
Because I'm a little stumped.
Me too.
I'm
having a hard time imaging this, what you're seeing there.
Parrot-sized. I mean, as soon as you said that, I thought, okay, mourning doves.
That's my thought, mourning doves.
But
well, actually a little smaller, like parakeet-sized.
A parakeet. Okay.
Hmm. Boy, you're stumping the bag.
Is there any sort of grosbeak, or is there any sort of like grosbeak that would come out of Canada or the mountains or anything? Or
well, there certainly are. The evening grosbeak kind of fits that description somewhat, but parakeet doesn't come to mind. They're a chunky bird with, a fat little bird, and they do occur in flocks. But not they forage
yellow,
in on seeds in the woods. Not a compost pile tends to attract insects. So I was thinking along the lines of insects, or maybe some latent seeds that may be picked up. It's a good one, Bo. Pictures.
No, I see. Let me ask you one other question then. Would there be any minerals in the gravel or sand or dirt that birds try to get in?
Now you're talking.
Because they don't seem to be on the vegetation as much as in the driveway and
now
in the gravel.
You're talking. Yeah.
And when I spook them, they'll circle around and then land as soon as they can, as long as I'm out of their way.
Huh. Yeah, you're on that now. That's
crossbills.
That would be.
Say it again, Julie. What'd you say, Julie?
I said maybe crossbills. They tend to like to go after the minerals on the ground. Yeah, but
crossbills.
Evening grosbeaks or crossbills or pine grosbeaks. Each of those are finch-like birds that need the grit, just like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
And that's a good source. And I frequently have seen that mix of birds around shoulder highways and gets them in a lot of trouble with road traffic.
Two other ideas to throw at you, Rich. What about, it's a little early, but snow buntings or pipits?
Snow buntings, more likely. Pipits, not quite so much, but that's a good idea.
Well, Bo, you really got our curiosity up here. If you have the old phone camera next time you're near there, snap a picture or two.
Yeah, get a good close look at them, and I think you go through that list of suggestions, and you'll come up with what it was. I think it's going to be, and Julie, that was a good idea with the snow buntings. They, too, are seed eaters and go after grit.
Go ahead, Rick. Or Bo, I should
interesting.
Say.
Well, I'll look the snow buntings up, and if that's what I feel like I saw, I'll send you all an email. And I really appreciate your time. Enjoy your the fall season, all right, y'all?
Yeah, good luck working. Thanks for the call.
800-348-2551.
That's the telephone number. Oh, tons of emails here. We'll wait until the 40 break, and we'll take care of those. Now we'll go to Woodsboro, New York, and it's Michael's turn. Michael, you're on.
Hi. You were speaking about canaries. I grew up with the caged canaries, and they sang. But we noticed that when there was a crowd of people, or we had crowds of friends over, they would sing much harder, much more actively. Was that a coincidence? Are they competing with us, or are they partaking in the conversation?
Show-offs.
And do other birds do the same thing?
Wow. Yeah. What do you think, Julie?
Gosh, I actually don't know.
Oh, I think they're being party animals. They want to be in there.
They're social.
You know, bring it on, man.
So that's really interesting. This has happened more than once, Michael.
Oh, yeah. It was a regular thing. We noticed it, and we thought that maybe the canaries were assuming human characteristics. But I just wonder if there are other birds who do it, and if maybe it could have been a coincidence.
No, I think it's they may be, you know, the suggestion may be that they are like dogs. Dogs think people are dogs.
Really? How do you know that?
Well, that's kind of a suggestion.
Ah.
And so you're a dog, they're a dog, you're a dog, everybody's a dog. The same thing with the canary. Thinks everybody's a canary. And they are sociable birds. They are gregarious, and they are singers, and they're songsters. And I think it was just a happy party bird.
There you go, Michael. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 if you have a birding question. Yeah, I mean, I've heard people say that. Dogs think that everybody they see. How do you know?
We don't
know. What are
you, but you know, it's a nice fun reader? It's a fun thought.
Okay.
It is just, you know, live with it. It can happen.
I don't have to live with it. I don't
okay,
have to think
I do.
About it
I
at
love
all
the
unless
idea.
You bring it up again.
I'm part dog.
Rick, who is in Massachusetts. Rick, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Kind of a throwback question that growing up in, like, central Connecticut, you know, maybe 40, 50 years ago, used to see off in the distance during this time of year lots of blackbirds up in the trees and massing for their migration down south. And nowadays, you know, you look across the horizon and you just don't see a lot of them. Are they gone, or what happened to them?
Yeah, that is, I think, one of the more poignant examples of that we can actually see for people that have been around long enough. We can see the actual decline in these species. So there are fewer individuals. So there was a recent paper that came out looking at all kinds of different data sources just a couple of years ago, showing that we had lost over 3 billion individual birds.
Okay. Across the world,
years.
Or just do they migrate to different
America.
Regions?
Nope. Like all across North America, we've lost many, okay. like a huge percentage.
I mean, you know what I'm saying, though, Rich, right? The black vultures weren't really around here, and
exactly.
then now suddenly they are. They came
right.
from somewhere, presumably.
There's been some shift in distributions, but as Julie says, there's been a net loss in numbers.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Well, Rick, thanks a lot. Now, explain to me again what we have tons of crows around my neighborhood, and I love crows. But what's a blackbird look like? I don't even know.
Yeah, I guess you could say like a mini crow.
Oh, really? So they're all black? So maybe I've seen them and not know.
I mean, there's red-winged blackbirds, there's common grackles, there's cowbirds. They're all slightly different, but they're all these like small, mostly black. They look all black when they're flying in a big flock over you.
Except in England. The
what?
England blackbird that sings in the dark at night is a thrush relative to our robin.
So McCartney got it wrong?
No, he had it right. Different bird. Blackbird, though, it's all black. Beautiful yellow beak and eye. Mm-hmm.
Thrush singing in the dead of night is not necessarily as great for a song.
No, I love it the way it is.
Yeah, that's all right. Number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk birds with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Thomas writes in, is there any way of telling how many birds you're feeding by the amount of bird food being consumed? We're going through about 50 pounds of sunflower seed per week.
Mm-hmm.
That work has been done. There are papers on that, and mainly through bird banding, tagging the birds so that you can identify them individually, and then taking the weight of the food periodically, setting it out there and measuring it through the course of the day, plus some calculations of the comings and goings, the elapsed time between visits, all that sort of stuff.
Right.
There are formulas where somebody figured it out. I don't know the answer, but there is
a test on this. All right, how many pounds of bird feed do you go through over at your house, Julie?
Oh, yeah, probably around 40 pounds a week.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of birds. I mean, this equation.
It's a lot of birds, but some of the birds literally come and they sit there and eat all day long. Like,
how can they fly after that?
Down.
And then some of the other ones, as Julie mentioned earlier, take the food and cache it away someplace, mm-hmm. and they keep coming back and forth. They're not eating it. They're just stowing it.
I find this interesting because, I mean, you both have talked about, oh, you got to have fresh seed. It'll go stale. It'll get rancid or whatever. But if these birds are saving it, then it's going to be stale.
Well, not to worry. There's a squirrel or a woodpecker or a nuthatch not far behind picking it up.
Yeah, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. It's Birding Today. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. VoxPop@WAMC.org. VoxPop, VoxPop at WAMC.org. If you have an email question for Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. This is from Kevin. I've been renting in Saugerties for 8 years. I have a bird feeder with black oiled sunflower seeds and suet feeder year-round. There are chickadees, titmice, cardinals, blue jays, downy, etc. If I move to a new location, how does that affect the birds?
It won't. They'll have a
backup. Wait a minute. We got an argument.
They'll have a backup source. They were there before you arrived. They'll be there after you leave. And the neighbor down the road has got a feeder going, and also just fall back on nature.
You got side eye.
I know. I saw that.
All right,
go ahead,
Julie. Now it's your turn.
No, I mostly agree with what Rich is saying, but I do think there's some artificial increase in the population. They may, like, I've been at my house now for 6 years and feeding the birds, and I'm sure there's more birds locally than there are nearby because I've been feeding them, mm-hmm. supplemental feeding, right? So if I was to leave, and I know, like, when I go on vacation, they're like, seem to be ravenous when I get back, right?
Right.
So I'm sure they would have to adjust, I think.
Would they die while they're adjusting?
I mean, if it's like freezing rain for like 2 weeks, then yeah, they may die. Yeah.
So how do you feel ethically about this, Rich?
Well, wait, all that is very true, but I do think that the wild birds have the resources to back up their needs. And I'm not talking about, huge feeder lots that are out there, but, you know, normal backyard bird feeders, I think that they'll find some resources and listen. Make it through.
The fact that you two had a big argument on this program is the number one thing about the whole show. This is from Peter in Cranford, New Jersey. Just came back from a visit to the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. Is that how you say it? Kanab. In addition to dogs, cats, and rabbits, the shelter has an entire building that houses parrots. So if anyone wants to adopt a parrot as a pet, or any other animal for that matter, all you have to do is contact Best Friends. This way a parrot can find a new home, and there's no fear that the bird is being plucked from its natural habitat. In addition, there is a pet transport service near the shelter that will transport the animals for free.
That's great. Yeah, so one caveat there for anyone who's thinking of adopting a parrot, they live decades long. So
really?
I mean, like a macaw will live like 50 years, huh?
So interesting.
So then the smaller parrots and parakeets are going to live, 10, 20 years. And so it's a long commitment that you should be aware of before you adopt.
And parrots are not always that happy little bird like those canaries in it were earlier. I mean, some of them can have attitudes. Whoa. And you get a parrot with an attitude, you got your hands full.
You may need to have two birds in order to keep them company.
Really? So mm-hmm. You got to give me an example of what a parrot with an attitude is. Swear at you? Or?
Well, yeah, they could. I mean, if they've been around sailors long enough, or they can be loud. They can be loud and consistently loud. It can be very annoyingly loud. That's number one. And the other thing is that some of them may not adapt well to your shoulder. Then you're not going to be like the pirate with a parrot on the shoulder. You're going to be with somebody with a parrot nibbling at your ear, and that hurts. Some of them are very, and they become very attached.
Yeah.
They become very owning. They think you are their mate. And whoever they're previous experiences have been may linger, and you may not meet the expectations. Yeah, it can be challenging. You need to be well adapted to the bird in order to adopt it successfully. I encourage those who can, please do.
Yeah.
Because they make wonderful companions, and some of them are very adaptable.
And there's a lot out there that need to be adopted.
I mean, if you're adopting it, should you go and check it out, make sure it doesn't have an attitude problem?
Absolutely. Make sure it's a good match.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, let's just move on. This is from Andrew in the subject heading Blue Jay Mimicry. I've heard that blue jays are in the same family as crows and ravens. Does that mean they can mimic human voices as well, Julie Hart?
Blue jays are very good mimics. They will mimic broad-winged hawks and red-tailed hawks. I'm not sure if they're asking. I don't know if blue jays mimic humans. I've never heard that.
No, that won't happen.
So, all right, regarding this mimicry, and we've talked about birds that do this on the show often. Rich, will they be good enough to fool the app?
Oh, absolutely. They'll fool me many times. I've gone outside my house expecting to see a broad-winged hawk overhead, and there'd be a blue jay laughing at me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear from the blue jays is that screeching of the
that's
clothesline.
Yeah, that's usually their language.
Why do we have underachieving blue jays at my house? That's what I want to know. I want some entertainment.
Work on it.
A parrot, I guess. Downy woodpeckers is the subject heading from Cindy. Here in Western Mass, I only have finch feeders out now because of bears. Last spring, we had a few downy woodpeckers, male and female, at the feeders every day for a couple months, even feeding a young one on a branch nearby. They didn't seem to be around in the summer, and now for the last couple weeks have been back every day feeding at the finch feeder. Do they go somewhere else in the summer? And that's from Cindy.
They're back in the woods. Yeah, they're back, natural resources, and you know, they found better diet menu out there. They'll be, and they're back. I'm waiting for mine to return after a short hiatus, and when they do, they're more than welcome. The downy woodpeckers, the hairy woodpecker, and the red-bellied woodpecker are happy to visit daily.
All right, this is one more. And, you know, this person, and I don't know who, there's no name here, and I'm not going to castigate too much, but, you know, pictures don't work on the radio. You sent a lovely picture of a little marble-sized egg. It's a speckled egg.
Oh,
it's in the palm of a hand. And I'm going to hand the phone over to you, Julie, and then you show it to Rich.
Yep.
It says, "Hi, birders. Who do I belong to? Found while cleaning out a bluebird box on Sunday." And it's a little speckled egg. Looks like it's kind of maroon and white. There we go. Oh.
I say it's a house sparrow egg.
House sparrow.
Yeah. House sparrow. And will they take over the blue jay?
Yeah, they're not good neighbors.
They're not?
No.
Okay. I mean, not blue jay. Yeah.
Bluebird.
Yeah. I don't know if the bluebird sustained the nest or abandoned it, but that sometimes will happen, that bluebirds will abandon the nest if they find an alien nest egg in their nest.
Let's go back to our phone lines. It looks like, wow, Joy is in Concord, New York. Joy, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I actually had a question about the crows.
Okay.
There's a bunch of crows, like by the hundreds, that fly from, like, Troy over the Hudson to, like, the Waterville area. And they were doing it for years, like, by the hundreds at dusk. Mm-hmm. And then they stopped. What's up with that?
Yeah, they moved their roost.
The crows.
Yeah.
Crows are very gregarious in the wintertime. They'll gather in huge roosts. Some are large and some are very large and some are enormously large. And it tends to be lately more or less in urban areas on the fringe of cities and towns around New York and in New England. And it's just their nature. It's a winter habit that they have. Back in the, they've been doing this for millennia. It's just now that they've somehow found human places, happy places for them to be.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think they move the roost around throughout the year and from year to year. And I don't actually know where it is right now, right around Albany. Do you, Rich, exactly?
No,
where?
I don't. But they'll some of them
are somewhere.
Continuous roosts, like the one down on in Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm familiar with. They come back there every year. And in the Albany-Troy area, they've been chased around by paramedics and, you know, because people don't want them. And they move them, they shoo them away, and they go to find a less habited place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joy, you want to follow up? Go ahead.
How long is the crow's lifespan? Like, her life cycle? Like, am I seeing the same crows from year to year?
Yeah, most likely. I would say, like, 10, 12 years?
Yeah, and an old crow can be up to 30 years.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's an old crow for sure.
So I'm saying hello to the same people in the same birds in my backyard every morning. They're getting to know me by now.
Yeah.
I love that you said people by accident because I call the birds in my yard people too. Yeah.
Joy, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. You know, it seems counterintuitive to me that birds, you said parrots can live decades, crows can live up to 30 years. To me, it seems like everything for a bird is sped up. You know, I don't know if their metabolism is sped up, but I would assume it is because they seem to be operating about one and a half ticks faster than our human experience. Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing that they can live that long.
Well, yeah, those are the outliers. And
the smaller birds have much shorter lives.
Yeah, they're the ones that whip around.
Yeah. They do have much faster metabolism.
All right. Yeah. And we've talked about that, Rich. You and I had a very long and not that exciting conversation on the show one time.
I was thrilled.
Yeah, about the experiences and how they experience reality at a different tempo.
Yes.
Like hummingbirds or?
Yes. And there's an interesting thing. Back as a kid, I listened to Arthur Allen's records, vinyls, of bird songs reduced in speed.
Yeah. Mm.
And remarkably, the hermit thrush or the wood thrush, I forget which, when reduced to one quarter speeds, sounds remarkably like the song of the whales.
And if you speed the whales up,
It sounds like a wood thrush.
Exactly.
What a wonderful world.
What a wonderful world. Let's go to Olive Bridge. Barbara, are you feeling wonderful? You're on the show.
Hi. There's every year there's calls about woodpeckers pecking on houses in the fall.
Yeah.
The solution is very, very simple because we go through this every single year. They'll be pecking on usually the last part of October, beginning of November. They start pecking. And if we put up the suet, which is way at the other end of the house, they will stop. And even today, if we don't get up early enough, because we have to take the suet in because of the bears, if we don't get up early enough, they'll be out there pecking. We put up the suet, and they will stop.
Barbara, that's a wonderful idea.
Have us really, they have us totally trained.
That's a win-win situation you got there.
Win-win. Everyone's happy, except we do have a few holes on the side of the house.
You got to get up early and get that sewer out.
Well, that's interesting. Yep. Now, Barbara, let me ask you a question. I have an email that came in from a Barbara about woodpeckers, but from Stone Ridge. That's not you. So we have two Barbaras asking woodpecker questions. Amazing. All right.
I guess so.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show. Appreciate
Stone Ridge and Olive Bridge are not far apart. Hi, Barbara.
Here we go. This one's from another Barbara in Stone Ridge. This fall, two or more small woodpeckers, Downy or Harry, have been pecking away at undamaged wood siding that is covered with solid stain. I see no evidence of insect larvae in the areas where they are pecking. I have seen them excavate the carpenter bee larvae from the siding in the spring, but there's no visual evidence of insect larvae in the area they are using this fall. Puzzling. What do you think is happening? What can I do to discourage them? When I hear them tapping, I either open a window or walk outdoors and they flee, at least temporarily. And that's from Barbara.
Barbara, meet Barbara and put suet out there.
Okay. That's all you got?
That's it.
Okay.
It seems to me Barbara had the answer.
You sure that wasn't the same Barbara? Just
providing another food source.
Oh my gosh.
Probably helpful, yeah.
Somebody sent another picture, but this picture is actually very impressive.
I'm good.
Okay.
All right, Michael, I'm going to let you slide on this one. Michael in Hinsdale. I took this picture this morning from my driveway in Hinsdale. What type of ground bird is this? Gotta tell you, Julie Hart, this is a handsome bird.
Oh.
Ground bird. Oh, wow.
Isn't that nice?
Okay, yeah.
Bingo.
Rich, explain it to us.
Yeah. Well, it's a large brown bird with a brilliant beetle green head and a flashy red splotch on the eye, a yellow beak, and a brilliant white ring around the neck and a long pointy tail.
All right, what is this?
And he looks exotic because he is exotic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's he's kind of like an immigrant.
What is it?
It's a pheasant.
A pheasant?
Yes.
Yep.
Don't we have pheasants around here?
We do. There's one.
All right, so...
this is a ring-necked pheasant, which is originally from Asia. They are raised in captivity and then released as...
Game birds.
Thank you.
Do they fly?
Oh, sure.
Yep.
They do?
Yep.
Well, there's two thoughts on pheasants, those that run and those that fly. The runners live longer.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember when I was a little kid, my folks lived in an apartment, and there was a pond nearby, and it was in upstate New York, and somebody had peacocks.
Mm.
Where are they native? Where do they come from?
Someplace in Asia, but, since they've been discovered, they've been brought all around the world, and... Good luck with that. I mean, they're beautiful birds. They have that brilliant display.
Yeah.
But they sure are noisy.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was also noisy when I was a youngster, so maybe I didn't notice. Andrew writes, and last week there was a giant migration of blackbirds going through Brunswick, New York on Route 2. The entire sky was covered with them. Trees looked like they had black leaves on them. It was incredible. No question there, but you feel free to comment.
Well, that's the typical pattern of migrating blackbirds, mixed flocks, which can be huge. And they're beautiful to watch. They look like a black river flowing down just over the treetops, undulating as the various parts of it rise and fall. It's actually a beautiful sight to behold, as long as they keep going. When they stop and they perch in your backyard, you got your hands full of blackbirds and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Linda writes in, we have seen bluebirds flying around our bluebird houses recently. We've cleaned out the houses. Will they use the houses for shelter this winter? Did we do the right thing by cleaning out the houses? And that's from Linda.
Yes and yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Clean
them
out?
It's good to clean them out. It helps keep the like parasite load down. And then, yeah, they will be using them for shelter as well.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, while we're on the topic, we have a bird feeder, like a water, is it a, not a bird feeder, but a bird bath
bird out
bath, in our
yeah.
garden. And it looks like it's getting a little rusty. Can I put any, is Rust-Oleum okay to put on that?
Negatory.
Really? What can I put on?
Fresh water. What are you trying to do?
To make it look.
What material is it made out of?
It's metal.
It's metal. Oh.
Yeah, it's an old heavy thing, and I was, you know, I was hoping maybe some black Rust-Oleum make it look nice.
No.
I suppose there may be some non-toxic paint you can get out there that you can apply to it, but I think the rust will be less harmful than the chemicals that may be in some of those mm-hmm. paints.
But I want to look at something that doesn't look rusty.
The concrete version of water baths are pretty good.
Yeah.
I think they're non-toxic.
Well, plastic.
This one was free. It was my mother-in-law's, so I can't really throw it out, or I'll be thrown out as well. Patrick writes in, what's the lifespan of chickadees and nuthatch? Mine are back with a vengeance and took 2 minutes to find the feeder. I just put it up. Chickadee muscle memory? And that's from Patrick.
Chickadees have amazing memories.
Do they?
Yes.
Has it been quantified scientifically?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, they do studies with chickadees and looking at how many seeds they can remember and where they've hidden
amazing.
Them. And they will recover them in sequential order, in the order that they put them out at, and like crazy things like that.
Amazing.
I would say probably like average lifespan is probably 4 years or so.
Yeah, I'd say 3 years for chickadee.
Three, four.
And that accounts for a very heavy first year loss.
Mm-hmm.
Those that don't learn the ropes quickly.
Yeah.
They're not the next generation producer.
Okay. You know, this email is from, okay, let me give you a little inside baseball. There's this volunteer named Bria, and she's at every fund drive, and she does great work. But she is a pain in my backside. I got to tell you something. She's always giving me a hard time.
I don't want to get in the middle of this one.
I like her very much, but she can't stop giving me the business. Well, Bria wrote in. Now, do we ask her a question? Should
yeah.
we? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Bria. Just so you know, Bria, this is over my objection, but they want to hear it. Bria writes in, couple folks have mentioned taking in their bird feeders to avoid attracting bears. When is it safe to put the feeders back out? When do the bears go to ground? And that's from my friend Bria.
It varies from year to year, of course, because of the weather. Normally, I think the general standard recommendation is starting November 1st. You can leave them out again. But this year has been so warm, I think I would wait longer.
Yeah, I would wait until after Thanksgiving this year. But do keep the hummingbird feeders out, because there are still some stragglers that are looking for a little boost on their way through.
Well, you know, we're almost out of time here. Just one very quick synopsis of an email from Matt. Just wanted to let you guys know that Richard Merritt, director of operations at Audubon in Albany, passed away on the 1st of November suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that you guys
know
him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's great loss. And Matt, thank you for writing that in. Rich Guthrie, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
My name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie, at gmail.com. No spaces, no dots, no underlines, no dashes.
And Guthrie is
Guthrie.
All right, Julie Hart, do you even want people bothering you?
Sure. If
okay.
they have questions,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, how do they do that?
My email is julie.hart. That's H-A-R-T at dec.ny.gov.
All right, Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie, splendid job, both of you. Thank you for being here. Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shop, offering fine artist materials and custom picture framing in the Rhinebeck at New Paltz area, serving the Hudson Valley for over 45 years. HudsonValleyArtistShops.com. Max Agway Red Hook, specializing in feed for horses, chickens, and other animals from Purina, Nutrina, Blue Seal, Triple Crown, also stocking hay, straw, and wood shavings. MaxAgway.com. And Berkshire Tekana Community Foundation, working to make year-end giving easy for donors at all levels, bringing communities together to support nonprofits and students since 1987. More at BerkshireTekana.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Now, we had two people screening the calls. Amber Sickles started. She soon tired of that. And then Kayla Sacco took over for the rest of the way. But thank you both. Wonderful job. Tomorrow, it's, it just doesn't say. Well, oh, it'll be something good. Enjoy.